Broadcasting live from the Business Radio X studios in Atlanta, Georgia, it's time for Atlanta Business Radio, spotlighting the city's best businesses and the people who lead them.
All right, this is Lee Cantor, and I'm here with my buddy Stone Payton. How you doing, Stone?
Good morning, sir. I'm doing well and have yet more family coming in today, starting today over the weekend.
That's right. The holidays from Thanksgiving to New Year's is just one nonstop. Right,
all the way through St. Patrick's Day. But remember me telling you about the mud race where my nephew proposed at the end of the mud race?
Who could forget?
Exactly. So now is the engagement party.
Oh, very nice.
So family from both sides are coming in, and since we're known as the Christmas house anyway, and our house is sort of set up like a hunting camp, there's a bed in every room. There's lots of people from both sides of the family, husbands, ex-husbands, boyfriends, the whole bit. They're all coming to town, and then I get to go over to the new bride's, new fiancé's parents' house on Saturday night for the engagement party.
There you go.
That's what's going on in my world. How about you?
I got nothing that exciting. Well, actually, Saturday I do have something exciting. The Entrepreneur Hall of Fame kickoff to honor, I think, the 2012 entrepreneurs that are being inducted in the Hall of Fame event with our buddy Mitch Schlemer is this Saturday night, which I'll be there. Representing Business Radio X with our buddy Jim Beach will also be there.
Beach is going.
Yep.
Oh, you guys will tear it up.
Yep.
Well, this is going to be a fun show. We've got a studio full this morning. A little bit later in the program, we are going to hear from Justin Hahnemann, who is out with a new book, and I'm excited to learn about that. We're going to hear from Ms. Push and a client and colleague of hers, Mr. Ortiz. But first up, on Atlanta Business Radio, it is my distinct pleasure to introduce a gentleman with Mulling, Mr. Emery Mulling. Welcome to the show, man.
Thank you. It's a pleasure to be here, Lee and Stone.
Well, we are delighted to have you. Tell us a little bit about, just give us a little bit of an overview. What are you guys out there doing for folks?
Well, for 26 years, we have been providing human capital services, which means career transition services when people are laid off or are terminated. We do executive coaching at all levels of management, conflict resolution, and team building.
There's a lot of people getting laid off. You must be a busy guy.
A lot of job security in your business.
We are counter-cyclical, but then executive coaching has been huge for the last 3 or 4 years.
So why do these guys need so much coaching? You would think that by the time they get there, they know what they're doing. But I hear that term all the time, executive coaching. What problem are you solving for them? Where do they need to coach it?
Well, the saying is they're great technically, but. So we coach on interpersonal communication and leadership skills at all levels. We do a lot of work in law firms for associates. We do high-level executives who have started not being very nice at work. And we work with high potentials, a lot of high potentials. And you ask me why executive coaching is growing. The millennium and Gen Xers are not being developed as leaders, and there are reasons for that.
And what are some of those reasons?
About 75% of middle management has been eliminated over the last 20 or 25 years. When I was coming along, I was a plant HR manager, division, region.
Were you a high potential?
I hope so.
He was. And the older he gets, the better he was.
Right. And then I was SVP of HR, so I had a chance to learn.
Right.
Young people today don't have that chance, and they are schooled, weaned on work task, project management, and there is no leader assigned.
So there's a lack of kind of an apprenticeship and mentoring. They're kind of thrown in the fire, and they got to kind of figure it out on their own.
That's right, and that's where we come in, Mulling Corporation, on high potentials, like I was.
It's revisionist history, maybe. We're not sure. So now, take us through what that looks like. The company has kind of gutted the middle, right? So you have some people that are hires up, and you have people doing the work, right? And now the hires up decide, hey, you know what? We have to kind of create a path for these younger people and give them some direction and identify the high potentials because we don't want to lose them. We don't want it to be kind of a transactional relationship with our employees, right? We want to grow them and groom them so they can be the future leaders of our company. So now they're like, I'm going to call Emery, and I'm going to have him come in and his people come in to help us identify the high potentials, or they're good at that?
Oh, well, we can help identify. We're good at that.
Okay, I got these handful of people that I want right. to really nurture, and I want to really get the most out of them. I think they can really help us.
That's right. Now, after every recession or economic downturn, there is huge amount of turnover because of pent-up demand. And this time, because of the length and depth of this down economy, it's going to be huge, and the C-level, the presidents and CEOs are now knowing that, so they are giving us people to show that they want to invest in them.
Right.
And a good thing is we're getting more females and African Americans than ever before, and they're showing all levels that they're wanting to invest in them and keep them.
So now you're so the thinking had been, and as we've been going through this downturn, the thinking had been that people are just hanging on to their job because they're afraid that there's not another job out there. So they may not be happy where they're at.
That's an understatement.
Right.
Surveys have been taken that 70 to 75% of people surveyed in a Harris poll would accept another job if they were offered a job.
Right.
Now, that is of huge concern to businesses.
And that's part of why they're hiring you, to fix, not to fix this, but to make sure they don't lose anybody.
We have fixed people.
you can fix people? That's
no,
part
we,
of your...
No.
Is that possible?
That was no live radio. We do behavior modification. All of our consultants have held senior-level corporate positions, former
right.
presidents and EVPs and SVPs, and we do business coaching. We don't do life coaching. We don't try to find out the meaning of life. We don't have spirituality as a part of ours. We
right.
do hardcore.
So you're not
goal.
Finding out they don't like their mother, and that's not where you are.
Well, that is therapy, and we are not therapists. We are coaches.
Right.
So are women more coachable than men in general?
Women more coachable than men?
Yeah.
They actually are. I think that women, we are very pro-female at Mulling Corporation. We're the only smaller company in Atlanta that's been presented the Prowess Award by the YWCA of doing most of female careers. Females are, and I'd like to hear from the lady present, are used to getting more feedback in appearance and whatever. And I know that a lot of women out in our audience, listening audience, have never heard of the male ego. And I am here to tell you, to include me, it does exist. And it's a real pleasure to executive coach females sometimes. And sometimes the males don't think they have an issue.
They've got to figure it out.
That is excluding the three of us.
Exactly. Now, is it like because guys don't like to go to the doctor? Like we don't.
That's one of them.
We don't think that we can be fixed or want to be fixed.
No. A lot of us think we don't need to.
Need to fix. Now, you mentioned coaching. We talked about mentoring. How are they different?
Mentoring is internal, and that is career pathing, teaching you the ropes within the organization.
Right.
And executive coaching is outside the company, and we can do more with a person outside dealing with interpersonal communication skills, leadership skills, because there's no paycheck involved, there's no politics.
You don't have the agenda or the politics, right?
And everything we talk about is confidential.
So what's the sweet spot? Are you working with really large organizations or small ones, or do you have a particular industry or two that you try to target?
We've been in business for 26 years, so we work with all industries, the largest companies in Atlanta, a lot of other Fortune 500 companies. We actually do coaching nationwide and internationally. Do it virtually. That's one of the changes in coaching. And also, we do smaller firms, such as law firms, privately owned firms, any size.
Now, is the law firms and the CPA firms and the professional services industry, is that an area that is kind of ripe for this? Because at one point, they were just charged in their business to just be a good lawyer, or being a good accountant. But now they're kind of charged with also, you better be drumming up some business too, and then that's maybe a little different skill.
Well, we actually do sales training for these people. I just finished an assignment of a senior level attorney, graduated number one in his law school, a very good law school, about 25 years ago, who needs to learn how to, and he did. But, yes, they're right, but we think every organization is right for executive coaching.
So how do you get out there and tell people that? How do you meet your market? You advertise? It's all referral? How do
no,
you do
that? We don't advertise. We get word of mouth, and we are very active in the Human Resources Society. I'm a former president, chair of the board, and Lifetime Achievement Award recipient. And I'm very proud that this year we were named the number one best place to work in Atlanta.
Nice. Congratulations.
Thank you.
So how did you pull that off? How do you get that good corporate culture?
It's based on employee survey, which I think is like the People's Choice Award, but I pay the employees off.
But you do pay them every week, so they're really invested in filling the survey out.
We have been in the top 10 list for the last 10 years. And we were number four last year, and we were just praying that we wouldn't go down this this year. But we were very pleased to be number one. And it's based on how you treat your employees.
So now what's kind of some of your secret sauce in this area?
I have a theory about management. When something goes wrong at Mullen Corporation, it's my fault.
Okay.
When something goes right, it's their fault. Now, if we keep having the same person doing the same thing wrong, but we have
does that include you in this?
No. Oh, they tell all of our consultants have held senior level corporate positions, and some of those presidents executive coach me on time to time. It is humbling, but no, it's that's a trite statement. You know, treat people right. It's amazing in American free enterprise how many companies don't do that. And look at the surveys.
Right.
Well, one of the reasons I was asking about the marketing, I was trying to envision that 4x8 card that you send in the mail to somebody to try to get them interested in your services. And I got to think it's kind of tough because you can't say, are you ineffective? Do you need direction? You call 1-800. So the people you talk to, they've got to already be receptive to at least want to have a conversation,
well,
right?
99% of our business is corporate sponsored, not self-sponsored. So we market to, and we have a sales people that know everybody in town just about, and the company's been in the business community in Atlanta a long time. Two things have to be present for coaching to work. Number one, you have to be aware of your developmental needs. You can't work on something you're not aware of. And then you have to have a desire to change. If you don't want to change whatever we're trying to assist you with, we're dead as coaches. And we can find that out real quickly. And we will go back to the organization and say it's not going to work. We have to do that to protect our reputation.
Sure. Now, is it ever a situation, this must have happened in the 26 years you've been doing this, somebody calls you and go, we got some problems. And then you're like going around and you're doing what you do. And then you're like, yeah, the problem is the guy that called me. He's the problem or part of the problem.
Listen,
it's like,
you're laughing about that? That is not funny because it really happens. And we are in fifth generations in some of the largest companies in Atlanta and other types. We will start executive coaching an individual, and then I'm working with the boss.
Right.
And we're pretty good at saying, well, I think we have an issue.
Right.
And
they're like, I knew it was Bob.
Right,
Bob's
right.
That Bob.
No, they usually say, they usually say it's our fault. No. And we have coached bosses and subordinates at the same time.
Wow.
And that's really good. Now, a lot of people would be intimidated by that. We don't break confidences. We teach most everyone we work with how to manage their boss. That is not a negative term. And in the book I wrote, The Mulling Factor, it explains how to manage your boss, and most people don't know how to do that. It's not a negative term.
Wow, that just slipped in there. The book I wrote, we got to talk about the book, man. Tell us more about the book.
Someone told me to tell you that. It's The Mulling Factor. It gives the ideal boss, the ideal work environment, because when there is misemployment, only 5% of the time is it the type of the work. 65% of the time, it is the boss, and 30% of the time is the work environment. The boss has an effect on the work environment. 95% of the time, it's boss or work environment. There's an assessment tool in there that shows the ideal boss, work environment, and you have no idea how many radio shows I have said that on.
Now, it sounds like it's important to you to kind of take care of your community that serves you.
Absolutely.
Like you're involved, you mentioned in, I guess I was assuming it was SHRM or some HR
yes.
group.
Yes, Society for Human Resource Management.
Right. It says that you're Board of Governors for the Institute of Career Certification International.
I'm a governor. You
Board
of please. You start calling me governor.
Governor.
He sounds like a governor. Doesn't
no.
He does. He
and
sounds like
so. You're that's an important component. And I guess that goes to speak. I guess with the corporate culture and why you're one of the best places to work in Atlanta. Number one. Because you, it's bigger than you. Like there's a higher purpose in what you're doing.
There is. We give back to the community. Also, Mulling Corporation is a part of an affiliation of 172 offices worldwide. And I've been president of Lincolnshire International, and we refer business worldwide. We have quarterly meetings. And
but your firm is your firm, but you're part of a larger network
yes,
of firms that do a similar thing?
Everyone is locally owned, and uh-huh. we know our marketplace. But the Board of Governors for the Institute determines the ethics and the certification standards. I'm a fellow of that organization. I had to be a fellow to become a governor.
Governor. You just can't show up and be governor.
I walked in the house and told my wife of 36 years, I was married when I was three, 36 years to start calling me governor, and she did not laugh.
She's like, you got it, governor.
So how important is chemistry in all this, these coaching relationships?
It is very important, but when the organization lets people interview two or three coaches, invariably, they're going to select the person they think is going to be the easiest coach on them. So you have to have chemistry, but in the final analysis, you've got to say, we need to work on this, and this is why. And I've got some stories that are heart-wrenching.
Now, what's that pain point that the individual or the person who engages with you, what is that pain point that they're having where they're like, you know what, I got to call Emery. This is just getting out of hand.
Executive coaching is conflict avoidance money. They want us to handle something that a lot of times the manager does not want to handle or doesn't know how, which means we might need to coach that boss.
Right.
There's a way to inform someone that they're going to be coached because the first thing is, am I in trouble?
Right.
And we think coaching is very positive. We don't do salvage work. That's outplacement, career transition work.
Right.
What you say is, we would like to invest in you. And therefore, we want you to work with one of the coaches at Mulling Corporation. And that sets a very different tone than we want to fix you.
Right.
And so what if I'm the self-aware type guy? I want to invest in myself, I want to grow, and I'm in part of a large organization. What advice, if any, do you have about how to frame that up and get your company to sponsor you and make that investment or at least allow you the time to go do that?
First of all, you need to find out through the grapevine if your organization provides executive coaching because it's not inexpensive. And then you have to make a case. And anytime you want to ask for a raise, ask for executive coaching, a benefit, use the sandwich approach. You go in and give some of your accomplishments, some of your bet, not 20, two maybe. In the middle of the sandwich, you ask for coaching. And then at the end of the sandwich, you remind them of how you can improve and add to the organization. It's not about you. It's about the organization because it is a pretty large investment. But tell them that you would like to stay with the organization a long time. You think you can learn from the leaders, but you would also like some extra help.
That sounds like fantastic advice.
We will start tomorrow.
Okay.
Scott, Stone.
Does 10 o'clock work for you?
I'll see you after this.
Actually, I'm more interested in your Fix Bob product.
Fix Bob?
Bob's name is Kevin, but...
I'm confused.
Well, early on, I thought we mentioned we could fix somebody. You were just joking, right?
I was. Let me say that Mullen Corporation is very good at taking good people and making them better. Now, that's good, isn't it?
That's right. Awesome.
Is there a warranty? What's your warranty, brother?
It really is. We have a 100% money-back guarantee. And in 26 years, we have never had to refund the money. If we have to start refunding the money, I'll stop the guarantee. But, no, we have very experienced coaches, and we wouldn't have been around for 26 years if we weren't very good at what we do.
Good stuff.
I believe it. What's the best way for our listeners to reach out and have a conversation with you guys about this?
Go to mulling.com. Very simple. That's our website, and our contact information is on there, mulling.com, and we always like to engage new clients and serve our existing clients. We're very proud of our
26 years. That doesn't happen by accident.
Doing something right.
Remember, I started when I was 10.
That's right.
Hey, listen, how about hanging out with us for a little bit while we visit
with
our next
guest? This is fun. I'd like to. I want to find out about these other interesting guests.
Well, we're going to ask her about the women being more coachable thing, too,
take on it.
Wait, I already know the answer. She was nodding her head yes.
She was already
We'll leave your mic on so you can jump in when you want to.
So, Kevin, leave the mics open. So, Lee, back by popular demand.
That's right.
We've had this young lady on the show before. And so delighted to have her back with a colleague and client, I believe. Please welcome back to the Business Radio X studio, Miss Catherine Ann Push with ConsultCat. Welcome back.
Hi, thank you so much for having me. It's been great listening to this morning. I'm excited.
We can coach you later.
Thank you. So I'm always into learning more. That's a lifelong advocation of mine.
What have you been up to since the last time we talked?
Well, we have entered into the sort of season of un-business shopping while everybody is entertaining guests and things like that. But we use this period to help businesses to get themselves ready for the new year, because at the beginning of the new year, it's a great time to put your business on the market. And we also work with buyers who are planning to buy a business to get them ready. And many times they don't know they're not ready. So we have to do some coaching to help them to get ready. It's basically education that we need to work with our buyers to make sure they understand what's going to be happening when they think about buying a business.
Now, who'd you bring with you?
Today, I brought with me one of my favorite friends and clients, Alan Ortiz. And Alan not only bought a business with us, but he also grew that business amazingly and then sold that business through us. So he's a very successful client.
Well, welcome, Alan. Congratulations on that.
Great. It's good to be here. Thank you.
Now, how did you develop your relationship with Catherine?
Well, I came out of industry and had just finished doing, you remember that era called the dot bombs?
Yes.
You know, well, I had one of the dot bombs, one that was successful and one that actually became a bomb. And after doing that, I decided, I've done this enough for people that make their money. I think I want to make some money myself. So I decided I'm going to get self-employed,
right?
Get out of the rat race, control my own life, all those things that entrepreneurs dream about to do. So I started doing 2 years before, started evaluating industries and things, and realized that going into small business was very different than working with publicly held or even privately held, but large professionally managed companies. Realized I needed to have some assistance, and so I started looking for a business broker.
So now you were thinking, I'm going to buy a business. Like, you didn't think, I'm going to start my own consulting practice, I'm going to buy a franchise, or maybe you did buy a franchise. But there's lots of choices when you say you want to, you know, have a business.
Correct. I had seen enough in my career to know that what I wanted to do was not have a franchise.
Okay, so was out.
That was out. Didn't want to pay.
You don't like rules.
Did you see his face when you said franchise? It was like the demons came out.
No, I mean, who wants a disinterested party reaching into your pocket to the tune of 5% a month, and all they want is your money?
Exactly.
I mean, they do little for you.
In your opinion, franchise isn't the way to go?
That's
so correct. So you wanted something entrepreneurial that you can have your own say in the matter and build in the manner you saw. Maybe something you were looking for, something maybe undervalued, where you was something there that you can make better?
Actually, not even that exotic. There was a fella down in Florida that started many companies simply by identifying a small nugget company that had an excellent management system, taking that management system, scaling it up, and making acquisitions. So I kind of followed that model, found an industry that I was interested in,
right,
and then found a little company that had what looked like the right combination of size, customer, contract, a little bit of a management system that I could identify, you know, looked like I could scale this up and refine it, bring in computerization, all those kinds of things. And we bought it and went in, you know, with a classic business approach of this is how we're going to do it, this is how we're going to invest, we're going to exit in 7 years under these terms. I mean, all those things that I hear almost no small business owner talking about.
And then how was Catherine involved in this?
Well, I started realizing I needed some help, and I went around and literally, I think I interviewed and talked with 60-plus business brokers.
Really?
She beat out 59 business brokers?
Yes, plus.
Wow.
Yeah, and let me tell you, there's a large community, and this might get me in trouble, but there's a large community of people who got out of real estate and went into business brokering because they think the answer is let's go for that 10% fee and do something better. But it is a gigantic leap to go from a professionally run business into even looking at the books of a small business. Mm-hmm. It's totally different. They run the businesses differently. They have different reasons for what they're doing.
They have bigger shoeboxes, right?
Bigger shoeboxes, all those kinds of things. And what I found was that people, I needed someone, I knew what questions to ask, but I needed someone with experience who understood what goes on inside a small business. What are the issues related to IRS? Do you buy the assets or do you buy, you know, just the name? And,
right.
And I mean, all kinds of things related to those issues that you would not normally run into simply because in a large corporation, you're in segments, you're in verticals. You know, you don't get all that. But let me tell you, when you go to buy your own company, you're everything.
So obviously the relationship went well enough that you worked with her to buy the business and to then sell the business.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah. Both sides of the equation.
Yeah, very interesting. And because I went in at the beginning and had that experience and had an objective of a return on investment in a fixed amount of time, I used her advice along the way to say, and my own experience to say, what do I need to do to make this thing sellable, and how will I know when it's ready? And so that was always something that my wife and I basically reviewed quarterly. And as it turned out, as we were getting kind of close to that time period, actually 5 years into it, I started letting her know, hey, the numbers are looking good.
So you were staying in contact through those 5 years? You were checking in with each other?
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
Is that unusual, Catherine?
Well, Alan is a little bit unusual in that he's much more businesslike than many people coming into small business initially. And that was wonderful for me. But, yes, I do stay in touch with my clients, and I do resell on quite a high frequency. People often only want to hold on to that business somewhere between 5 to 7 years, not necessarily because they've been analytical about it the way Alan was, but because they get burnt out or they reach the level where that sort of Peter principle, you know, applies in small business as well. They may grow the business to the stage where they hate it. and that's about the truth. You know, it's not a small business anymore. It requires managing a lot of people, which people don't enjoy oftentimes if they're an entrepreneur. They don't like the paperwork, the administration, the IRS, et cetera. So they're ready to get out and turn it over to someone who is maybe more like Alan, who came out of the C-suite and is ready to make a big change in their life, but can manage other managers. Maybe had some coaching along the way, and knows how to manage other people.
Now, Alan, it seems like that you went into this whole experience not like this pie in the sky entrepreneur. That's like my dream was to always own a bike shop, you know, and I'm gonna be the best bike shop in town, and all the people will come in here and we'll bike together. Like you were looking at this like math. Right?
Absolutely.
Like, this is a mathematical equation here. I'm going to put this amount of money in, this amount of time in, and I'm going to get this kind of thing at the end.
Right. Absolutely.
I mean, and you're saying that's unusual?
Very unusual. I mean, when we were looking, we looked at many businesses. I looked at many before I even found Catherine. And I was just amazed at the lack of focus of the owners, and it reflected all the way through their business and their operating style and their policies and procedures.
Right.
Their accounting. Golly, it's scary what you see in people's books. And we're talking significant companies. I mean, we looked at large small business and small business.
Right.
So it's, the whole thing can be kind of scary. That's why, you know, like when you're buying a home, that's why I think people come over from the real estate model. You need help with someone who can tell you, here's what's going to happen and here's the thing.
Right.
The
what you don't know. For. Like, right. You don't know what you don't know.
That's right. Yeah, that's right. Help you from, keep you from throwing yourself into the pit. I mean, when I would ask people questions that were normal everyday things to somebody like Mr. Mulling here, they would stare at me in crickets. Huh? What do you mean? You know, like, who are your major customers and what percent of the cash flow do they represent? And they would go,
good question. I'll have to check.
Right. So those are the kinds of things that made it difficult to find one. So, and then, of course, the financing. And financing has gotten worse. I mean, if anything, because of all the issues.
Worse meaning harder to get financing.
Yeah, impossible to get. I mean, no one's really financing anything. I mean, the industry was... financial industry was never really set up to help small businesses anyway. I mean, that's a myth. They don't exist to help the local hardware store guy or the guy starting his own business. It just doesn't happen.
So now that you've bought one and sold one, do you feel like you've cracked the code? Do you feel like you've got this Ortiz methodology that you can take out, and maybe it has to include it?
Maybe you can work with Emery on the Ortiz factor.
There you go. Do you feel like you've kind of got it? Yeah?
I don't know what Ortiz means.
Well, no, it's it basically means you got to go in with a focus. I think that's many people get into a small business because they like doing it until they build it to where they hate it. You know,
right?
They stumbled into it and they were working. They looked up one day and they had a company. You know, but they never stop. I love to ask a small business owner, "What is your exit strategy?" I asked that of a gentleman that owns a $100 million company. Crickets.
Wow.
Not a clue.
Wow.
And I'm like, golly, how could you be at that size and you don't know what you're doing? And he's a year older than me. I mean, this guy's within a nine iron of retiring, right? And he has no answer. That's a scary thing.
So, well, it's a scary thing for him, certainly, but does that necessarily... that doesn't necessarily keep you from buying it, right? Because you might say, this guy's clueless. I'm going to come in, do the math.
No, it wouldn't. I mean, makes it more difficult than when you're trying to do a business deal.
I see.
Because I'm trying to hit this moving target.
Right.
You know, many times the smaller guy, real small, is just wanting out. And he's got a number he's trying to hit.
Right. It's like fatigue for him, right?
There you go. Yeah, it's pain. Right. You know, you're trying to give him a Vicodin, you know, to make him feel better. But but as they get larger, it gets more complex because their egos are wrapped up in it, and their whole self image and it just gets terrible.
And they often want much more than it's really worth.
Oh, yeah, they absolutely do.
They haven't done
now.
The same math the way you have, right?
And when you ask them the questions on how did you get that number, and it answers things like.
That's how much the yacht I want to buy costs.
That's right. Exactly. The boat I want is, you know, so many feet a foot, right. Or dollars a foot.
So how about startups? You ever thought you might take a swing or two at a couple flyers?
You've got too much scar tissue from that.
Well, actually, I actually have this thing called a wife that has said, you know, you've done pretty well, and gee, why do you want to do this again? And I'm trying to get you off of that train and moving more towards doing, you know, something else, like retiring.
Right.
But I'm doing some consulting work and working, not coaching per se, but it's kind of interesting to listen to Mr. Mulling there because I'm essentially doing that. It's a kind of a subject matter deal. I'm dealing with sales and marketing of an expanding manufacturing company who does environmental pollution control barriers. They're out of Europe and they're expanding in the U.S. mainly because why? Fracking,
right.
Gas, right. Cheap energy, right? And lots of environmental rules coming. So I'm working with them on their sales and marketing strategy and tying their business strategy and those. And that's fun. I mean, I'm using the noodle again, and that's fun, and you can charge ridiculous rates. And you know.
Well, and you and Catherine are running into people that need coaching all the time, so surely you could be bird-dogging for Emery day in and day out. Yeah,
that's a good idea.
Emery likes it. In fact, we put this whole show together. To help Emery. This is actually the Emery hour.
Yeah, as he was talking, I was sitting there thinking, okay, let's see, Germans, expanding into Americans with Southerners in the management team, and their conflicts abound.
I did not mention that we do international.
No, I heard that.
Yes, you did.
I caught that. You didn't see my balloon go up, you know?
Yeah.
What a delight it must be to work with someone like Alan. I mean,
yes,
you gotta love it.
It really is. Many times we're working with those business owners that Alan mentioned, who either have not thought about their exit strategy at all and really, really need to, and we encourage them to do it before they call us and say, gee, I hate this business, I have to do this today. And one of the things that Alan observed that is very, very common with our buyers is that sort of shock that they get the first time that they look at small business financials. They're just not audited, you know, and right. People have this expectation that they're going to see corporate audited financials like when they buy a stock, you know, and it's not going to happen. So for us, it's managing the expectations and doing the education. And with Alan, it was just a pleasure to have someone. You can see why I've maintained the relationship.
Yeah, absolutely.
Intellectually, it's wonderful to have someone to talk with about these kinds of things. And
he seems like a dream client from your standpoint in terms
yes.
of the seriousness and the kind of the attention to detail about the math stuff about business
yes.
where I would imagine, I know we run into it, there's no shortage of passionate entrepreneurs.
Exactly.
But passionate entrepreneurs that can, you know their mm-hmm. way around a spreadsheet, maybe it's
right.
a little more rare.
And lots of times when we're talking with would-be buyers, I hate to be discouraging, but I feel like if I'm representing the buyer, I have to be, you know, and I'll be saying, no, you don't want to own that restaurant. And they'll say, what? And I'll say, no, you don't want to own that restaurant. And here's why, you know. And so I'm both coaching them from a standpoint of this is not the right industry for
right.
you. And also look at the numbers. You know, okay, maybe you can't build a big spreadsheet, but let's just look at how much this business is making, how much you're going to take home at the end of the day, and can it even pay the loan you're going to ask me to get for you? So, you know, it's we have a lot of people who are at that level of expertise.
Now, in your business, Catherine, you want to get into the business earlier, right? You want them way before they're at that point, like, I got to sell this tomorrow, right? You want to start building these relationships with the business owner
Absolutely.
Sooner than later, right?
Absolutely. We say if you have a business, sooner or later, you're going to have to get out of it. You're either going to shut it down, you're going to sell it, or you're going to die, and your wife's going to be figuring out.
And she'll be calling you.
Yeah, and that's not good because oftentimes she doesn't know anything, and
right.
she's in a crisis situation. So we like for people to start thinking about their exit strategy at least 5 years, but that's rare, you know. Oftentimes, if we can get them 1 or 2, we can start getting the business looking its best for the buyers who are going to come in and be analyzing those financials.
Now, does it cost anything for a business to consult with you to talk, have that initial conversation to discuss this?
Initial consultations are absolutely free. And then we put together a program that if they need work for the next couple years, we'll put together something that works for them that's tailored to their needs.
And then it would then, but it's always looking towards that exit at some point.
For us, it's always looking toward an exit, either a sale or a merger, or sometimes they'll decide they actually need to buy something. Instead of sell the business.
So it might be an acquisition.
Mm-hmm. Exactly.
Now, you were talking, we had obviously Alan here talking about his situation, but is there has there ever been a case where you've been working with somebody and then they were acquired by like a super large firm?
Yes. In the last couple of years, truly small businesses have really been struggling just to maintain their business. And owners are trying to sort of restore their bottom line and their personal portfolios. But what you're seeing is businesses are looking around and saying, how can we grow without having to take a piece of somebody else's business when there's not much out there? And so what they're doing is acquiring other businesses in their industry. So there has been a lot of what we call synergistic mm-hmm. or strategic acquisitions. And that doesn't always have to be a huge business that's being bought. If they're in some niche where there just aren't a lot of people, maybe a few years ago, for example, it was heating and air. You know, somebody bought up all the heating and air companies. you know, okay, so now you only have a couple of big ones instead of hundreds of little ones.
Right, or yogurt chops.
Or yogurt chops, well.
We do have one or two of those here in town.
You know, it needs to have a long-term future in general, but
You're not bullish on yogurt chops?
I think that's a short-term thing, but some people are into that, so.
So I would think that there could be some wisdom for some organizations to apply some intentionality to this thing, and maybe one of their exit strategies is to get acquired. Identify,
yes, absolutely.
Look, here's 5, 10, 15 folks that could, should, maybe if we set ourselves up right, they get this 5-year runway or 3-year runway or whatever you coach them through, and they put themselves in a position for someone to acquire them.
Exactly right. And there's just a certain number of characteristics that we can identify, much like when you coach someone, you know, let's identify where those holes are, where those spots are that needs a little attention, a little tweaking, and we can tweak those so that they're much more attractive when the time comes.
Man, I love hanging out with smart people. I wish we could do this all day. But that's okay. We're pretty good at inviting people back, right?
Yeah. Don't you? Don't you? Isn't this what you do all day?
It's pretty much what we do all day.
But I know, but I never want to leave one show.
I know.
This has been a lot of fun. Alan, thanks so much for joining us, man. It's been a real pleasure. I don't know if you want to be found or not, but if you do, you can certainly share your contact information.
Actually, the best way to find me is
through Catherine.
That would be good, because I'm always, one of the things we do is network a lot, and I'm always giving out people's names, including Alan's, for various projects.
But maybe you will come back and join us sometime.
I absolutely would love to.
All right. Thanks, man. And Catherine, let's do make sure that all of our listeners know how to reach out and get in touch with you and have a conversation about this.
Because you're always on the lookout for business owners, right?
We are always on the lookout for business owners in particular, and also for people who are ready for a big change and want to buy a business. And we can be reached at 770-918-9390 or www.consultcap.com.
And if you need any kind of leadership coaching, I know somebody that might be able to help you.
Absolutely.
Absolutely.
And I can probably get you on the radio.
Thank you.
We can all help each other. Everybody wins.
That's right.
Hey, you going to hang with us while we visit with our next guest?
I love this show. I'd like to be here all day myself.
Terrific. Okay, all of the preliminary stuff is over, Lee. It's time for the big dog.
The grand finale.
And we are welcoming back to the Business Radio X studio our buddy, author, colleague. He's got a new book out called Be Extraordinary. And I'd read the subtitles, but I don't have my glasses on, so we'll let him take it from there.
I can do that for you.
Welcome back, Justin Hahnemann.
Hey, it's great to be back. Appreciate it.
We are delighted to have you. You've been busy. You're not just resting on your
laurels. No. A lot of new projects going on.
So what compelled you to write this book, man?
Yep, so this is my second book. I was here on your show to talk about my first book, Make It Happen, Live Out Your Personal Brand, if you remember. And then back,
remember
back with my wife, and I had a new CD out at the
time.
That
was a much better interview for some reason.
Yeah, I know. You guys enjoyed it when she was here.
Yeah, I think she's more coachable. You know, I don't know. It seems like women are more coachable. They're better authors. The whole bit, Emery.
They're better looking.
They're better looking.
That's true, and she is. And then this book just out 2 weeks ago, and it's called Be Extraordinary, Crush, Mediocrity, and Spark Curiosity. And as you know, I like to use my projects to encourage others to make a positive difference. And so that was kind of the big idea behind the book.
So did this one come easier? Did you knock this out in a weekend? Or tell us about the process.
Yeah, this one was definitely faster than the first, because once you understand the process, as others know that have written a book, it's all about the content. And so for me, the longest period of time it took, you know, it took the most time to pull together the content. But this thing came together in about 5 or 6 months. So it's been great. And it's, again, just out 2 weeks ago. And it's been a lot of fun getting out and talking to groups about how to raise the bar, how to be extraordinary, not at work, not only at work, but also in the community and your personal life.
Now, was there any, when in the title, Crush Mediocrity and Spark Curiosity, was there any, from a marketing standpoint, those words crush and spark are used in other successful books of this kind? Was that on purpose? You did that on purpose?
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, I mean, as you know, my day job is with Coca-Cola, right. So I am around these concepts pretty regularly. But I will say that not only the cover design, but the words and whatnot. I mean, yeah, of course, it's all about, you know, creating a hook that makes people go, "Wow, I'd like to check that out."
Right.
And so there's no, you know, everything from the title to the cover design to the layout of the book and how I structured the content was all purposeful.
Now, the reason I was bringing that up is that when someone's an author in today's world, they have to think that way, right? The days are gone where you can just come up with a concept. Some big publisher is going to go, yeah,
that's correct.
You're my guy.
Yeah, no
here,
doubt.
Do this.
Yeah, especially you know in the world of publishing, getting with a big publisher and expecting that to take off or to be picked up by a big publisher. That's not going to happen for most people.
Right.
And the reason is because even when you have your own business, even when you have some name recognition, even if you've been in the political scene and whatnot, the publishers are all about moving books. All they care about is how many books can you sell. And you're going to be on the hook for the books that don't sell. And that's not a situation that most people want to be in for a lot of reasons, namely financial. So there are many other publishers that I'll say are kind of in the mid-range, and that's where I am with this book, which is they can help with the layout and the design and all of the content and deliver your product to you and to anyone else through all kinds of different channels without the obligation of all this financial overhead.
Right. But then it puts the onus on you to be the marketer and promoter of the book.
That's correct. So then it goes back to what's your purpose in writing the book, which is, you know, when I'm talking to groups, I want to have a platform I can speak on. When people say, what are you about? I have a platform I can talk to. And when I go out and coach and mentor others, we heard a lot about that earlier, I can reference things that I've put together here in this book.
Mm-hmm.
One thing about writing, whether it's a blog or a book, it really clarifies and crystallizes your ideas and thoughts.
Sure.
And it forces you to really, I'd say, be more sharp in terms of how you deliver content.
So let's talk about the content a little bit. Let's dive into this thing. What are some of the ideas that you would definitely want to share with anyone you spoke to if you had an opportunity coming from this thing?
Yeah, so it's interesting. Earlier we were talking about the gap in leadership in our society, and that bothers me. That to me was, I can't solve all of it, but I can solve maybe with one person or 10 people or 100 people or 1,000 people. And I think that's truly what the problem is out there that I was looking to solve. So up-and-coming leaders, I see a gap. I see a gap in the business environment in terms of leaders, true leaders, not just managers. And then also I'd say there's this sense of accepting mediocrity as a way of, that's okay in terms of this world and in today's life based on the fact that we've gone through a tough time and a recession and whatnot the last couple of years. So my goal is to challenge those that have the potential to reach and pursue that next level, to take those that are already operating as extraordinary leaders to look around and find others that they could coach and mentor to the next level, and then those that have maybe kind of been through their career and have moved on and they still have lots to share is to find ways that they can give back. So those would be the three things that I set up in the book.
So why do some people, though, seem to have that intrinsic motivation, that fire in the belly, even though their actual raw tools may be a little bit modest, but they have that fire in the belly. And then others that I know we've all had people in our organizations that, man, what a waste of talent and intellect.
No doubt. Yeah, so my theory on that is, it kind of leads to what do you do with your creativity and your creative curiosity, as I talk about in the book. And what I found is once you go through school and into businesses, everything is around a structure or a performance review process, or you're really boxed into how the company or the organization asks you to operate. And what happens is over time, you just lose naturally your creative curiosity. You're not encouraged to bring that out in most organizations and in most business environments. And so one thing I do talk about is how do you ensure that you don't lose that? How do you invest in yourself? How do you make time in your schedule to go out and pursue those creative outlets or to bring the creative aspect back into your business environment and find ways to plug that in? So that to me, it was a really important concept to build on.
This book strikes me as a great one for peer-to-peer learning, like the kind of book
no
you could give everybody on the team the book and have them read it, but then get them together and have them explore these questions or go to these little bite-sized nuggets that you've got in there, talk them through and describe how it applies to their work or their personal life. Is that an accurate assessment of one way to use it?
Yeah, and one of my challenges, and you know, you read a lot of business and leadership books out there, they're about an inch and a half thick, and you might find two or three key bullets or elements that really become the takeaways from the book. So the way I structured this was very different. Each chapter, there's 41 of them, and don't be scared. Each chapter is only two or three pages.
It's just bite-sized. I love the way you've structured this
thing.
And
that's the whole idea, right? So there's a big idea. I've got quotes in here from people across my network.
Is Lee quoted in there?
No, but he can be in the next one.
Second edition.
That's right.
I specialize in forwards.
Lee and Emery in the next one.
Well, that's doable. And then I go into what I'd say are some of my lessons learned or stories, experiences and whatnot, and then wrap up with how do you bring it to life? How do you apply it? How do you apply the concepts? And then a bottom line, a key takeaway. And the idea here is you can't go and take 41 ideas and implement them and do them all, but maybe you find two or three that you can really focus on to make yourself a better leader.
I think you need to read this book, Lee.
Okay.
I don't need it. I'm already extraordinary.
You're already extraordinary.
But I'll let you know a little nice. Secret. I typically will take a book like yours, the hard physical book, and I'll do it when I'm in a bookstore, and I'll do what I call the thumb test. And I do this with my thumb. I know all you listeners can see this. And I just randomly go to a place in the book. I open it up, and if I can find value on either of the pages that I'm looking at, then I say, okay, there's something to this book. I wasn't able to do that physically, but I got it on Kindle.
Yes.
And I was able to do that digitally. And so for me, it absolutely passes a test. I think anyone who wants to accomplish anything should get their hands on this thing.
Yeah, I'm glad that you found something valuable in it. And like I said, the reward when you do something like this is the feedback you get from someone that's gotten something out of it. And you have to do it for those reasons, and that way you find success. You can't be hoping that you sell X number of books or make some X number on a list in terms of ratings and whatnot. You have to go into it with the right idea of making a positive difference, and that's the real reward.
And you're going to sell plenty, but if you didn't sell a single copy, you brought up something earlier in the conversation that I believe is absolutely true. Just sitting down and committing these kinds of ideas to paper and putting them out there for people, it does crystallize your own thinking, doesn't it?
It does. No question, and you can find time to do it. I mean, in the last 6.5 years, I put out 2 books, 2 albums, 5 singles, and I work a job that it requires way more than 45 hours a week. And the whole point in telling you that is the biggest excuse people give is they can't find the time. And I can tell you there's 168 hours in a week, and most of us only work 5 or 6 days of 10 hours a day, and that still leaves 100 hours. So there is time. You just have to find it.
Absolutely. All right, so how can folks get their hands on this book? Let's make sure they know how to get to the music as well.
Question.
And you've also mentioned more than once in this conversation, speaking to groups.
Oh, yeah.
This is something that you do regularly
and a passion for it.
So let's hit all those and make sure folks can get access to this.
Very simple, all on my website, Hahnemann.com. And then, of course, all of the multi-channel outlets for buying books and music. It's available iTunes, iBooks, Amazon, Kindle, the BarnesandNoble.com, of course. Where you won't find this necessarily is in most bookstores, and the reason goes back to the whole large publisher thing. And to get in large bookstores or Costco or things like that, you've got to be with a large publisher, but you take on the added risk of what if your book doesn't sell. So there's a trade-off. But Hahnemann.com is where you get all of my content.
Now, Stone, I know when you're on your book, one of your strategies of getting out to market was when you speak, you made them buy like 100 books, right?
I made them. I held a gun to their head.
That's right.
I won't tell any jokes. I won't be charming unless you
buy
a box of 350
cases of books.
That's right.
So you're doing that same.
So it's really interesting you bring that up because that's a pet peeve of mine. Here's the pet peeve. I'll come speak to your group if you buy a book for everyone there. Or I'll come speak to your group and I have a fee, but I don't. What happens is typically people do want to offer something, and there's a way to make it so they can donate something to a charity of your choice, right? I would much rather give them the option. I'll bring the content. I'll bring this, and if people want it, they can pick it up there.
Right.
But I never force any group to buy my book.
Actually,
my
strategy was exactly backwards from what you described.
What was it?
It was, if you want to buy my book, you have to listen to me talk.
Right.
You can't just have the book. If
well,
you want
that
to buy
is
a box.
True. Yeah, if you want to buy it, you do have to listen to my message. So.
Well, that is fantastic.
Yep.
Congratulations.
Thanks,
on it. Please don't stop. Keep the music coming.
Yep.
Keep the thought leadership
absolutely,
coming. And you know what I think we ought to do?
Right.
When we get we have our big mixer coming up next week, and that's everybody,
right.
And for everybody, and that's
friends
great.
And family.
But we also get our team together, the Business Radio X team, our the people that host their own shows with us, our clients, and our core team. I think it would be really fun for when we get that team together to have Justin come in and talk.
Be glad to. That'd be great.
Would you be up for that?
Yes, and you don't have to buy books for everyone.
You heard it there. We got that.
But I will. But I won't. I tell you what I won't do is I won't buy them beforehand and then let them steal all your thunder.
That's right. Yeah, I'll pull the concept.
I'm speaking from some scar tissue here.
All right. Well, I appreciate you coming on,
great.
Justin.
It's good
and
to see you guys again.
Hahnemann.com.
That's it.
You can learn all about what Justin's up to. I think there's a blog there too, right?
There is. Absolutely.
Good stuff. All right. This is Lee Cantor for Stone Payton and our guest today. We will see you all next week on Atlanta Business Radio.